Okay, good evening. Welcome back to Shmuel Beis. We are learning Perek Yud Aleph. So tonight's shiur is going to be a little different than our regular shiurim. And the reason for that is that last week we really read through the entire Perek. We read through all of Perek Yud Aleph, and we got a sense of the certainly the Pashup shot in the Psukim. However, we didn't have a chance because Baruch Hashem, there's so much there. So we didn't really have a chance to delve into some of the Mefarshim and really the Ma'amari Chazal. This is the kind of Perek where you cannot just learn the Perek with the Psukim and the Mefarshim. You have to really learn it with Chazal and the Gemaras and the Midrashim that are that discuss it. So so we're going to do that tonight. So just a brief brief overview of what we learned last week. We'll move into some of the things that we're going to talk about. And then Amir Tzash, next week, we'll pick up with Perek Yud Beis. So we did a storyline in Batsheva last week. And the big storyline, and again, this is just a Pashup shot in the Psukim. And we're gonna try to see if we can understand it. But the basic storyline here, that David sees this woman on his roof. He sees this woman, Batsheva, and she... there's something about her that really attracts him, and he sends for her, and she comes, and they sleep together. She becomes pregnant, and then Dov finds out that she's Matt's fellow Uriah. Uriah's on the in the battle with Am. David calls him back. According to the Pashup Shad and the Psukim, he seems to be trying to cover up, to cover up what he did. He tries to get Uriah to sleep with his wife. So sounds like some people might think that that she's pregnant from Uriah, and Uriah's not excited. He's not into that idea. He wants to go back to the battlefront. All of his comrades and his friends are all in the battle, and he's over here. He's not happy about that. So he and David have a little. Back and forth about that. We'll see, will be important. And finally, David sends him back. And not only does he send him back, but he sends him back on the front lines. Uriah gets killed in battle. And the message is sent back from Yoav to David that Uriah has died. And then the end of the Perek, the Pesukim, we learned that that the message comes back. Uriah has died. His wife Batsheva mourns him, and then David takes her as a wife, and then the parak concludes, the very end. The parak concludes, "Vayera hadar asa David be'enei Hashem," that this was something that made HaKadosh Baruch Hu very unhappy. That's how the parak ends. Okay, so that's a basic review of the parak. So yeah. We met last week. I'm trying to think which Erush was it. Yeah, one of the Mefarshim explained, I think it was the Malbim, who said that David's mistake really here was that he did not go to battle with the soldiers. He should have gone to battle with the soldiers, and he didn't. So the fact that he didn't do that and it's relaxing, and that's why the roof. He went to the roof to relax. That was the that was what. Yeah, so that itself was something improper. That itself was something that was improper. That he should have been, on the front lines with his people and not relaxing at home. That was how we understood last week. I think that was the Malbim, but I don't remember. Okay. So again, that you read the Psukim. It certainly sounds like David sinned. I think we mentioned to Renel, if I'm not mistaken, who takes things literally, and he says he can't took him at their face value, and the Abar by the Malbim, and the Abar sinned in five different ways. Number one, Batsheva was a married woman. Even though we're about to learn, we have learned, we mentioned last week that Chazal say that she was divorced, but nevertheless, the Abarbanel says doesn't really fit with the Pashtun, the Pesukim. Number two, How can you try to cover it up? Try to get Uriah to come back and sleep with his wife and cover it. That's a terrible thing that can lead to serious consequences. How can you send Uriah to the front lines and have him killed? Number four, how do you cause his death at the hand of the Ammonim, right? You know, even if you think maybe he's Chayiv Misa or something like that, so then you kill him, you know, kill him with a Beis Din, kill him, you know, with Jewish hands, to send him to the front line so the Ammonim can kill him is something also that that the Abarbanel says was not right. At the end, after Uriah is found to be dead, then it sounds like David just, you know, right away takes Bathsheba, you know, as a wife. Sounds like almost he's still overcome by his Yetzer Hara. How could that be? And for all these reasons, the Abarbanel thinks that David sinned. And he said, even though he sinned, David sinned, but he did tshuva. But he did tshuva. And that's the lesson really here, is that David sinned. You know, even great people can sin, but he did tshuva. Now, the Malbim is very unhappy with the Abarbanel. And I think we mentioned this last week a little bit. I don't know if we got really into the Malbim too much. I don't remember how we left it off last week. But I think we mentioned the Malbim. I'm not sure if we got really into it. But they're very unhappy with the Abarbanel. And he says, you can't just read the Pesukim at face value. David is too great of a person to really assume that he just did something. I mean, you read the Pesukim, it sounds like, really a low level, it sounds like almost. You know, you can't say David did such a thing. But even more, the Malbim says, practically, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense if you read the Pesukim literally. Why? Because if you tell me that she was a married woman and he committed adultery and he slept with a married woman, so then not only is she usher to David, she's usher to Uriah, she's usher to everybody. But a woman who commits adultery, a man who commits adultery, Chazal tells us, the Gemara says, usher to Boel, and she's usher to her husband, and she's a person who committed adultery with her. So how could it be, if it's correct, David really sinned, then how could he have stayed with her afterwards? How could he have taken her usher? And not only that, but the Abarbanel is claiming that he did tshuva, and that's the lesson of this parak, did tshuva, this parak and the next parak, which we haven't learned yet. But David did tshuva, what do you mean? You can't tovel the sheretz biyada. But if you jump into the mikveh and you're holding a sheretz, which makes you tamei, that doesn't make you tamei because you jumped into the mikveh. So asks the Malbim, what do you mean you did tshuva? He's still married to her. He's still married to Bathsheba, and you're still married to Bathsheba. It doesn't make any sense. So to say that David sinned is not only that, but we'll get to all the explanations. But also, we're going to see that that David's going to daven very publicly that the child of this union should live. He's going to daven for that. Asks the Malbim, if David and this share. So what's he davening so hard about? The kid is a mamzer. It's a you know, the product of a whole union. He's gonna be, this child should live and be, make any sense. Okay? Who, so yeah. I don't remember. I don't remember. Yeah. What? I don't think. But I don't remember. I have to look. Yeah. Anyway, so because of that, the Malbim says you have to assume that Chazal are absolutely correct. The Abarbanel is wrong. Chazal are correct, and that's the end of that. And he says Chazal tell us, the Gemara says, Omer David Chata, you know, Alatoa, as we mentioned last week. Right, anyone who says that David sinned is making a mistake. He did not sin. Everything was checked out, and everything was proper. Okay. So now the question is, so as we mentioned last week, you know, we talked about this also, if he didn't sin, so what was he doing, right? So the Gemara says he didn't sin. So what happened? So we learned last week that that every soldier from David's army wrote a get for his wife, a Jewish divorce for his wife before they left. Somebody shown him learn it was an outright divorce. Somebody shown him learn it was a conditional divorce, that if he doesn't return by a certain time, then retroactively the divorce will take effect. But be it as it may, this was they were divorced. They were not married. They were divorced. And that's why this was not prohibited. It was not prohibited. It was not usur. It was completely mutter. Not only that, but what about the fact that David sent Uriah to the front lines? How could he have killed him? Right? So to that, the Mefarshim and Chazal say that he was married by Malchus. How was he married by Malchus? Because when he called him back and he told him that he should go home, he didn't listen. He didn't go home. He flouted David's instructions. And he went and he just stayed across the street. We learned across the street from the palace where all the other, you know, single soldiers were staying. That's where he stayed. David sent him with things, with food. He didn't take it. He didn't do it. He's not listening. Right? He's flouting David's Malchus. The king tells you to do something, you do it. If you don't do it, you're a married by Malchus. So to an extent, there was also that element that really Uriah was Chayiv Misa, which also helps explain a little bit why David was justified to send him back to the front lines. You know, that part of it was that he was Chayiv Misa. There's another element also, which is interesting. The Malbim says that when he sent him to the front lines, so we learned that not only did Uriah die, but other Jewish soldiers died also. So how do you explain that, says the Abarbanel? The Malbim says very simply, this was a war, right? This was a war. So in war, people die, right? David didn't start a war, right? The war was going on already. The battles were happening already, right? So people were going to fight. People were going to die. Now he sent Uriah to a certain, you know, to the front lines or whatever he did. Uriah was Chayiv Misa. Everybody else, right, who died in that battle, who was not Chayiv Misa. So that's just part of the natural order, right? That's part of war. That's part of war that unfortunately, it's not a good thing. Nobody likes it. We don't like war. But unfortunately, you know, that's what happens in war, that people die. And it's a terrible tragedy. But the war was going on. The war was happening, you know, with Uriah, without Uriah, with David and Bathsheba, without David and Bathsheba. So the fact that these people died together with Uriah is not a sin. David didn't do anything wrong with that. That's how he explains.
Rabbi.
Yeah.
Interesting that, you know, we're talking about maybe David did something wrong. Maybe Uri did something wrong. But no one mentions maybe Bathsheba did something wrong. Right. No one mentions her. So why is that?
Yeah, we'll talk about Bathsheba. You know, we'll talk about Bathsheba in a little bit. I mean, listen, it's also, you know, the king summons you. You know, it's David HaMelech. You know, I'm not sure how much she had the wherewithal to say no or to whatever. You know, and again, but again, we're going to learn what Chazal explained, that she had good motivations also in all of this. Okay, so that's the halachic framework of how, you know, how David got around this. There was a get here. They were divorced. Maybe it was conditional. That's a little bit of a wrinkle in the story. But they were divorced. Uriah was Chayiv Misa. He was married by Malchus. And that's how things, you know, kind of settle in from a halachic perspective. It's interesting. I saw the Malbim also brings a proof that they were divorced from the very end of the perek. If you look at the very end of the perek, so when they find out that Uriah has been killed, Pasuk Chavav, take a look at Pasuk Chavav, when they find out that Uriah has been killed, so the Pasuk says, Vatishma Eishes Uriah, Kimes Uriah Isha. The wife of Uriah, and we pointed this out last week very quickly, that it doesn't mention her name. We know her name is Bathsheba. But it does not mention her name. It calls her Eshes Uriah. And then it says, Kimes Uriah Isha, repeats the fact that Uriah, her husband, died. And then it says, Vatispod al Bala. And she gives a hesped for her Baal. For her Baal. So why the change between Isha and Bala? Just three words apart from each other. Isha and Bala. Now, Isha with a mapake means Ish Shela, right? So it means her husband. And Bala also means her husband. So why does it switch? So the Malbim says that it switches to show us that the perception wasn't the reality. The perception was that they were still married. When people viewed it, they viewed it, oh, Uriah died. That's Bathsheba's husband. But in reality, says the Malbim, they were not married. That's why it switches the language to Vatispod al Bala from Isha to show us that the perception and the reality didn't match up. People thought they were still married, but in reality, they were no longer married because of this get. So in reality, there was a get, and that's what took place. Okay, right. Right. Yeah. Okay. Good. So if it's a real get, you know, not a conditional get, and we mentioned this last week, if it's a real solid get, then there's nothing to worry about, right? Meaning then the thinking was that every soldier gave his wife a real get, and then when they came back from battle, they would remarry them. And there was, I guess, a certain honor system. She wouldn't get, you know, married to someone else in the interim, right? And then when they got back from the battle, they would remarry each other. You know, that's what was done. So if that's the case, then everything is fine. It's a real get. They're divorced. And that's it. You know, if he comes back, they're going to remarry. But, you know, in the meantime, they're not, you know, in the meantime, they're not married. And we know Uriah does not come back in the end of the day. Okay. So let's hold on. Okay. Good. Hold on. Okay. Now, if it's a conditional get, then it's a little more complicated, because if it's a conditional get, if it's a conditional get, then presumably, you know, you should wait to see if the condition is going to be fulfilled, right? You know, right now there's a get, but it's pending, right? So you got to, you know, really you should be waiting until the get's finalized before you, you know, marry this woman. Okay.
The fact that Maria didn't go back to his house may also be maybe they
from her, so he didn't go back. Right. We mentioned something like that last week also. Yeah. Okay. So here there's a whole question of, you know, so even if we figure out that halachically everything was okay, there was a get, married the malchus, everything checks out halachically. But the question was this still the morally right thing to do? Ethically, was this the right thing to do? And we find at the end of the perek that there is something wrong. Vayera hadavar, right? That Hashem is not pleased at the end of the perek. Next perek, which we haven't learned yet, but we know that the Navi takes David to task for what he did, right? So obviously there was something off here. So, you know, we have to understand what does Chazal mean when they say Kala Omer David Chata Eino Ela Toeh? That's a mistake that he sinned. But we find that it was bad in the eyes of Hashem. We find that Nasan gave him Musar later. So, you know, what's going on? There are several different approaches. I want to give credit where credit is due. I found these approaches. There's an article, I think a set of Sfarim written by this Rabbi Daniel Fine. He's a Rebbe in Eretz Yisrael, and he wrote these Sfarim, I think Pathway Through Nach or something like that. And he writes that he has a very nice article where he summarizes all these approaches and brings all the Ma'ariv HaKamos. So I'm quoting from him, from his approach, and you can check it out, you know, firsthand if you'd like. So the first approach, is that really, you know, David really was not on a level to do something wrong like this, right? David was on a very high madrega. he was a very holy person. The whole purpose of this event was really to teach us the Koach HaTshuva. And there's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah that he quotes, that basically he was almost compelled to do the Aveira. But it wasn't really, he didn't do this willingly, the way that others do an Aveira willingly. And this raises a whole host of philosophical questions. Of course, we all have Bechira, right? Bechira Chavshis. But essentially, the Satan got in the way here. And the Medrash, which kind of works with this Gemara, says that when David was on his rooftop minding his own business, the Satan came along and presented a deer, a very appetizing, you know, looking deer. And David wanted to hunt the deer. So David shot an arrow to hunt the deer. The arrow missed the deer. And instead the arrow smashes through Bathsheba's window. Okay, so this was all planned by the Satan. Smashes through Bathsheba's window. Now, Bathsheba's window is now open. And now Bathsheba's revealed behind her window. That's why David saw it. It's not that David was on the rooftop looking, right? Chas v'shalom, David was a tzaddik. The Satan puts this deer in the way. David tries to shoot the deer, misses. The arrow smashes the window, and now he sees Bathsheba. And obviously now the Yetzer Hara gets the best of him. So of course he had Bechira, and he made a decision to go ahead and do what he did. But at the end of the day, this was all worked out by the Satan to put this in David's way, almost like a stumbling block to put this in his way. And the purpose is to teach us about tshuva. The purpose is to teach us about tshuva. Now, so if he, you know, again, if he really didn't do anything wrong, you know, the whole thing was really just the Satan got in his way to do this. Halachically, we explained everything works out with the get and everything marred the malchus. So what's the big deal? Why is it Vayera Hadavar Bene Hashem? Right at the end of the perek, how come the next perek we find Nasan Anavi, you know, giving him Musar? What's going on with that? So here, there's another Gemara that's very interesting in Sanhedrin. And there's also a Medrash that says that this all came about because David asked the Ribono Shel Olam to test him. He asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu to test him. Why? Because he saw the high madrigos that the Avos reached when they were tested. Avraham Avinu had 10 Nisyonos, and look how great of a madriga he reached. And David was thirsting to reach that madriga. So he asks Hashem, please test me. Send me a test. Send me a Nisayon so I can pass and I can reach a high madriga. The lesson here is that we don't ask for Nisyonos. We don't ask for Nisyonos. We say every day in Shacharis, after Birchos HaShachar, that we daven to Hashem, V'loli de Nisayon. Don't bring me to a Nisayon. Why? Because sure, Nisyonos are great. If you pass them with flying colors, you're raised to very high heights and you become a great person. But we don't always pass Nisyonos with such flying colors. Sometimes we stumble. Sometimes we fail Nisyonos. Sometimes we barely pass. I think it's based on Pesukim. I don't know the Pesukim off the top of my head. I think it's based on Pesukim. It's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Zayin. I'm not sure. Yeah, it's based on the Gemara in Kuf Zayin and Sanhedrin. Okay. So that's one approach. That's one approach. This whole thing was put in place by the Satan, and that's why he eventually ends up doing this. And he's held responsible because he asked Hashem to test him, and that's why it turns out the way it did. Okay, another approach. This is presented by the Maharal, and it's based on the fact that really David did not sin. He did not sin. There was a divorce, and even if you say it was a conditional divorce, at the end of the day, Uriah did not come home alive. The divorce was good, right? So that means retroactively, they were divorced, which means when David slept with Bathsheba, she was not married. She was not married. He didn't do anything wrong, right? Now, what did he do wrong? What did he do wrong? He should have waited, right? He should have waited. Why? Because waiting would have finalized the divorce before he slept with Bathsheba, and not waiting means there's some element of a risk. Let's say Uriah does come back, right? So he was taking a risk, because if Uriah comes back, the get's not going to take effect retroactively, and then we're going to have a big problem here. So he was taking a big risk. He was taking a big risk. At the end of the day, he was fine and he didn't sin. Now, why did he do this? So why didn't he wait, right? Why did he take the risk? You know, why not just wait? So this is based on another fascinating Gemara. And the Gemara says that really, Bathsheba was destined to marry David. This is a fascinating story in the Gemara. Bathsheba was destined to marry David. This is in, hold on one second. I think this is also, yeah, also the same Gemara in Sanhedrin, Kuf Zayin. So Bathsheba is destined to marry David. Okay, now what happens? And not only that, but the Gemara says that David and Bathsheba both knew this, and even Uriah knew that David, that Bathsheba was really destined for David. Okay? So how did this all go down? Right? How did this all take place? So the Medrash says that who was Uriah? Who's this guy Uriah? We know he was introduced in the beginning of the parak as Uriah Hachiti. So there were two approaches, if you remember, in the Mefarshim, why he was called Uriah Hachiti. One is that he was a convert, he was a ger, and really he was from Chiti, he was from Ches, right? B'nai Ches, and he converted to Judaism. And the other is that, no, he was really a Yid, but he lived in that area, so they called him Achiti. The Medrash says, no, he was a guy. He was a Chiti. Who was he? Not only was he a guy, he was the arms bearer of Goliath. He was the arms bearer of Goliath. So what happened, says the Medrash, David kills Goliath. Okay? David kills Goliath. However, the Medrash says that although he killed him with the slingshot, he wasn't able to take out the sword. If you remember the story with the sword, that Goliath's sword was very large, very heavy. David wasn't able to get the sword. So what did he do? So he asked Uriah, who was the arms bearer, to help him to get the sword. And Uriah did it and helped David finish off the job to kill Goliath. So Uriah, in the end, who was Goliath's arms bearer, once... They were in cahoots. They were in cahoots. He was the arms bearer, you know. So maybe he was like a lower level. Maybe. Oh, so now because of this, so Uriah did a tremendous chesed. So David, because of this, promises Uriah that I'm going to give you. There's a girl that's destined for me. I'm going to give her to you as a wife. So he gives Bathsheba to Uriah as a wife. Uriah, of course, converts to Judaism. He marries Bathsheba. Based on this, there's a source that says I believe it's based on the Zohar, that Uriah actually never slept with Bathsheba, even when they were married. Why? Because he knew that it wasn't really his girl. This wasn't really his wife. He was married to her technically, but she was really destined for David. So he didn't have relations with her. We know also this similar story, Chazal tell us, that Palti ben Laish, right? Remember the story of Palti ben Laish with Michal and David. Michal was married to David, and maybe they got divorced. A whole back and forth, right? We discussed this in the past. So the other husband was Palti ben Laish. The Gemara says that Palti ben Laish never touched Michal. Why? He slept there. He put a sword in the middle of the bed, and he said, if I ever cross this sword, kill me. Right? Why? Because this is David's wife. So right now, you know, the way Shaul worked it out, I'm married to her. But it's not really, it's really David's wife, so I'm not going to touch her. Right? Same thing here with Uriah and Bathsheba. Now, it's interesting. The Chazal tell us that also Bathsheba knew this. Bathsheba knew that she was destined for David. Right? She was aware. They both were aware. And therefore, it says that... That Bathsheba used to walk back and forth in the window and kind of like hint to David, you know, that one day we're going to get married. One day, you know, we're destined for each other. So right now we're not married, but one day we're going to get married because that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has in store. So based on this, the Mefarshim and Chazal explain that this was why David was willing to take the risk. So the chait here, quote unquote, sin, because it wasn't a real sin, because she was divorced. But the fact that he was willing to risk the conditional get not being effective was because he knew in his heart of hearts that this was going, that there's no way HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to allow Uriah to come back alive. This must be the opportunity where Hashem is going to kill Uriah in battle. And I'm going to marry Bathsheba, who I've been destined to marry forever. And that's why he was willing to take the calculated risk here. There's another element here, an interesting element. Obviously, we know that Shlomo HaMelech is going to come from this, right? From this union. Mashiach is going to come. right, from this marriage. So obviously, this was, you know, according to the Zohar and according to the Gemaras, this was a holy marriage, and this was the original plan, right? But it just took a little bit of a detour because of this reward that Uriah was promised. The Arizal adds a very interesting, Aaron.
I was just going to say, Rabbi, what you were saying before about Bathsheba, the Mayim Loewe says that she had Ruach HaKodesh. Now, how does she have that, Rabbi? Was she a prophetess? Was able to have Ruach HaKodesh?
So Ruach HaKodesh is a drop lower than Nevuah, right? Prophecy is Nevuah. So Ruach HaKodesh is a little bit lower than Nevuah. So it is something, I like to call Ruach HaKodesh divine inspiration. No, divine inspiration. It's not a nevuah. It's not a prophecy. But, you know, Kadosh Baruch Hu kind of inspires you. So she had this, you know, she had this feeling, you know, that, I don't know a better way to describe it, but she had this like gut feeling that she was destined to marry David. You know, with every fiber of her being, she understood that she was really David's, you know, David's wife, David's Basher. Okay, so the Arizal very interestingly says that that David also was supposed to, he was supposed to fix up some spiritual, you know, mistakes and spiritual errors that were in the Bria, that were in the world from Rachel and Leah. And he says that's why David, we know, reigned as king for 7 years in Hebron and 7 years in Yerushalayim. So that was to atone, that was to be mechaper for the 7 years that Yaakov worked for Rachel, 7 years Yaakov worked for Leah. However, the time had not yet come, right? Meaning it was really too early. So that was the you know, where David made that mistake was that it was a drop too early, and he went ahead a little bit too early before he should have. Another possibility here is that even though David did not sin because there was a get and everything was in order, halachically speaking, but nevertheless, there was an element of chil Hashem. This he quotes from Rav Nevinsal. And Rav Nevinsal says that because of people's perceptions, that the perception was that David was committing adultery, so that resulted in the chil Hashem. And because of that chil Hashem, that's why Vayera Hadavar Be'enei Hashem, and that's why Nasan is going to give him Musar next week, because of the revelation of the Chil Hashem that occurred here. Again, not because he sinned, but because of people's perception of how things were. Okay. I don't know. I'm not up to it yet. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Because of this. Okay. Could be. Yeah, could be. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. So one last thing, you know, it's very strange. According to this approach, and this is the approach that the Malbim takes, and certainly Chazal, you know, in the Gemaras and the Midrashim are very clear that David did not sin here, and the Malbim works with this, and many of the Mefarshim do as well. Why did the Psukim paint it in such a light? You know, you read the Pashup Shad in the Psukim, and, you know, and it sounds bad. You know, it sounds bad. So I once heard this when I was in Rav Meir Twersky's shir. So we came across this Gemara of Kol Omer David Chata Eino El Atoa. I think maybe it was, if my memory serves me correctly, I think it was mentioned maybe in a Tosfos that we learned. I don't remember 100%. But we came across this Gemara, and he addressed it, and he shared an answer, which I saw by fine quotes from the Drashos Haran. And he also quotes it from an Ibn Ezra, also says the same thing, that, you know, why do the Psukim describe it this way that he said? So he says, you know, the Ran says in the Drashos Haran that we have to recognize, you know, when we're reading Tanakh, this is not a movie, Chas v'Shalom, right? We're not reading a dramatic novel, a fictional novel. You know, sometimes, unfortunately, sometimes things are portrayed that way. When you just read the pasuk shot in the psukim, it sounds like it's like this dramatic, you know, novel. It's a fictional novel. It's a, you can make a movie out of some of these, you know, stories. Chas v'shalom. You know, that's not the that's not the idea. That's not the idea. These people were gedolei olam. David HaMelech. I mean, you read all the stories about David HaMelech, how great he was, right? And we talk about Sefer Tehillim. He composed Sefer Tehillim. We're talking about one of the great giants in Jewish history. So how do we understand this? So the Drosha Saran says, this is what Rabbi Meir Twersky quoted. He says, the idea is that you read the psukim. The psukim are written for those reading the psukim. They're written for us. We are reading the psukim. So when we read the psukim, we're shocked. Whoa, somebody did such a thing? Forget David. Anybody who committed this, it would sound terrible. But the message is, David on his level, he did something which was a sin. For us, that would have been the equivalent of what it says in the psukim. Not that David did what it said in the psukim. Because really, Uriah divorced her. Really, Uriah was married by Malchus. So he didn't sin in the way it says it in the psukim. But for us, on his level, because tzaddikim are judged, as Chazal say, kichut ha-saira, Hashem is very medactic, Hashem is very particular with tzaddikim and how they act and how they behave because of their high madrega. So for him, on his very high madrega, even what he did, as we learned tonight, either he took the risk, maybe he shouldn't have, he did it a little bit too early, maybe he shouldn't have, maybe there was an element of chilul Hashem in people's perception that he didn't take into account 100%. Whatever that little crack, that little shemetz, that little tiny bit of sin that David committed, on his level, that was the equivalent of us reading these psukim. This is what we would have done. That would have been the same level. Right? So he didn't do exactly what it says in the psukim. He did what Chazal tells us he did. There was a get. He was married by Malchus. Everything was 100% kosher from a halachic standpoint. Sure, was there a little bit of an error? Yes, 100%. You can't avoid that. Vayera hadavar. There was something. There was a little bit of a misjudgment, right? But it wasn't what it says in the psukim. But it says it this way to drive home the point to us, because when we read the psukim, we have this shock factor. Oh my gosh! Look at what someone did. David on his level. On his level, that was the impact of his sin on his level. That had we done such a sin, this would have been our sin. But on David's level, it was a sin on his level of not waiting enough, not taking into account the chilul Hashem of it, you know, not taking that calculated risk because Bathsheba was destined for him, whatever that little chait was on his level. So that's the idea. And Rav Nevin Sol also, he has a beautiful thought, which are my fine quotes at the end. And he says that, you know, part of this is also to teach us to be down l'kaf schus. You know, we see something, we see somebody else doing something, and we immediately judge. We immediately jump to conclusions. You read this perek, you jump to conclusions. Oh my gosh, look what David did, right? Sounds terrible. Look what he did with Bathsheba. Look what he did with Uriah. It sounds terrible. Slow down. There's a context. Back up. There's a context. Understand. Investigate what was going on. Was there other things? Yes, there were other factors at play. There's a context. There's a background. It's not so simple. It's not always the way it seems. And that's really the bottom line lesson of this: to recognize the greatness, the godliness of David HaMelech. Did he do something wrong? Yes, a little bit on his level. He sinned on his level a little bit. But for us, the lesson is to judge favorably and to recognize that the great tzaddikim and tzidkaniyos that we have in our holy Tanakh are just what they are. They're not chas v'shalom what some people make them out to be, you know, actors in movies and fictional novels. They're great people. Even great people sin on their level, but on their level. And that's an important point to drive home, which the Malbim certainly does. Okay, we'll stop here for tonight. Thank you very much for joining. And Amir Tzah Hashem, next week we will pick up with Perek Yud Beis. Yud Beis.
Rabbi, great class, Rabbi. Great class.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.